And here to ring the opening bell, John Cougar Mellencamp with Little Pink Houses. And I got to tell y'all, I am so tired of cutting grass. And I don't know if it's the rain and the heat and everything that combines perfectly, but I'm cutting it every 5 days and I'm mulching it and I got grass left over, which means that I'm not cutting it too soon. If anything, I'm cutting it too late, and I'm cutting it every 5 days. And I got to tell you, it's August 4th, and I'm tired of it. And I'm about to give up the ghost and say, that's it, screw it. But if you do, then it gets so thick where you get that, and you got to pick the lawnmower up and shake the loose grass out, right? Then it's, and then, nobody wants to do that. So I don't know what I'm going to do. Have you been there with the grass, Ian? You know what I'm talking about or not? Man, jeez. And I had a guy do it for me for a while, and he would skip it, and it would look terrible, but I would feel as though it didn't matter then, because it wasn't on me, it was on him. Even though it was my home, I felt as though it was on him, it wasn't on me. But, man, I'm telling you, I'm fed up with it. Have you been there with the lawnmower, though, where it's...
Many a times when I had to cut it for my dad back in the day, and then he'd get mad at me. What are you doing to the lawnmower? It's not my fault the grass is long.
Exactly, yeah. We'll take a break, come back, talk about this jobs report and what's going on with the Fed and President Trump and blah, 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 blah. Tommy Tucker, glad you're with us, WWO. All right, well, there you go. It's 6:15, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Hot and humid, chance for showers today. Couple of waves in the Atlantic, but not expected to affect us as we matriculate through hurricane season. Mark Hamrick joins us now, Bankrate senior economic analyst. You heard what President Trump had to say about these job numbers. How you doing, Mark?
Good to be with you, Tommy. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you, sir. Tell us, for those that don't deal with this information regularly, what these job numbers are, where do they come from, who makes them up? Because we don't know. I mean, people hear about these things on the news, and then we stand at the water cooler or the coffee machine, and we repeat them. We don't know what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, the president is wrong in the way that he's describing these numbers as essentially manipulated or made up for political purposes. I guess some of the suspicion, if you want to call it that, arises from the fact that they are revised repeatedly after the initial release. So, for example, on Friday, we had the release of the July jobs report, and in that we had 73,000 jobs added on the month, which was shy of expectations. And as part of the regular review of this data, as more data comes in, coming into federal government, civilian employees, not political employees, civilians who've been there for many, many decades, there were downward revisions for the months of May and June, which subtracted a total of 258,000 jobs. So that the previous months were not what we thought they were. They were much weaker. And there are revisions that are also done, the so-called annual benchmark revisions, that go back and attempt to look at, well, are we measuring what's going on with the job market, the workforce, the economy appropriately? And this is what the people who are professional statisticians have been doing for as long as I've been looking at this. And I've been looking at this for many, many years. And it took until this president of the United States to say that, oh, well, this was a negative jobs report. There must be something wrong with the data, and there must be something wrong with the person who's in charge of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And over the weekend, you saw essentially a chorus of very sharp criticism of the move from industry groups such as the American Statistician Association, the National Association for Business Economics. And these are groups that are comprised of people from private industry, not political people, who are saying we need robust and credible economic data to make decisions of all kinds, whether, let's say, you're running a bank, you're running a radio station, even just trying to manage your own personal finances. Is the economy getting better? Is it getting worse? Is it marching in place? And if we can't trust the data, then we're in a lot of trouble, because at that point, we're flying blind. And at that point, then you don't really know what to trust or what to believe.
See, when it comes to the exact science of this, where does the Bureau of Labor Statistics get their numbers? Because it seems to me to have an exact number on, I don't know how this can be anything but a rough estimate to begin with, and then a guess after that. Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, it's based on survey data. And so surveys are done of individuals and surveys are done of businesses. And so, for example, the payrolls data that tells us the number of jobs added on the month is based on the survey of businesses. And then on the unemployment rate, that is a survey of households. Are you working? If you were, how much were you working? You know, did you get a pay increase? That kind of thing. And it's done, the initial data draws are conducted by people who work for the Census Bureau, people who have experience on that sort of thing. And then the data is compiled by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So there's some thought that one of the reasons why we're getting larger revisions right now is because the response rates on the surveys have been falling, meaning fewer people are initially replying. And so if you go back a month or so, you'll get more responses over time. And then that's when, if you want to call it the revision or the refinement in the data comes. And so that's essentially what's going on. And, I will say also, given the fact that most people don't eat and breathe this kind of information, is that there's been a lot of discussion for years now that, like so many things, such as tax collection or tax enforcement through the IRS, the collection of statistical data is not a priority of some members of Congress who are fine with underfunding it. And so it has been said that we need to do a better job of funding the statistical gathering and management. But that hasn't really been coming. And so, much the same as not in my backyard with funding all kinds of things. This has been underfunded. And, with the president seeking to undermine the whole process, it's hard to imagine that gains any momentum to give the agencies the funding that they say they need.
We're talking to Mark Hamrick, Bankrate senior economic analyst. Bankrate, hardly a bastion of liberalism. I think that would be accurate, Mark, wouldn't you?
Well, I think one of the reasons why we're trusted is because we aren't political. We just aim to help people understand what's going on with interest rates and the economy and help them to solve their financial problems.
We'll talk about what these revisions mean to the economy or what it indicates for the economy when we come back. 621 traffic now, WWL. Now, that's President Trump. We're talking to Mark Hamrick, Bankrate senior economic analyst, about what it means with the revision of the jobs report. But when it comes to President Trump and the revision of the jobs report, that's not the way I remember it from last August. Because it seems like last August he says that he had no evidence for this, that Joe Biden's administration was caught fraudulently manipulating job statistics. So you can't have it both ways, can you, Mark?
Well, of course, that's not unusual, the stance of this particular person. Sure. And let me put it this way, Tommy. You and I talk regularly. That's a great blessing for me, and I appreciate it very much. If we thought for a moment that this had been, even a chance of this happening, we would have been shouting it from the highest rooftops. And you can imagine in the polarized political environment, you would have heard more about this, let's say, from members of Congress. They would have perhaps held hearings on it. I'm pretty sure the Democrats are going to hold hearings on this now because, they need to shine a light. Essentially, both parties need to shine a light on the need for credible and robust economic data. But here's the thing, having watched the economy for many, many decades now, we need to know when the economy is performing well. We need to know when it could be at an inflection point. We need to know when it's not performing well. And I'm going to maybe make a bet, not literally, but I'm going to hold on to hope that we'll continue to have credible economic data. But the president has undermined trust in that process, and I'm pretty sure there's going to be a good number of people who are going to follow his lead on this, at which point, we're going to have a problem. But, we need to know, for example, if the economy is softening as it appears that it is right now, certainly the Federal Reserve, where Jerome Powell is going to be, you know, in office until May of next year, the Fed needs to know what's going on with the economy. And so don't all the consumers and businesses and other stakeholders in this economy, including investors. And so to undermine the credibility of the economic data, or worse, to weaken the ability to produce the numbers, would really be unprecedented and really a travesty.
Thank you. And so the effect on the interest rates is likely to be what as a result of this?
Well, so as a result of the apparent weakening of the economy, the chances are rising that the Fed could cut interest rates at the mid-September meeting as the president wants. But it's a little more complicated than that, because the Fed needs to also have confidence that inflation is coming down closer to its 2% target. And unfortunately, one of the impacts of tariffs, taxes on imports, as we all know by now, is to raise the costs that are passed along to consumers and to some degree either paid by business or absorbed by business, weighing on their profit margins. And so essentially, if you think of a balancing act here, where the Fed is by law supposed to strive for stable prices and maximum employment, right now both of those targets are under attack.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Mark Hamrick, Bankrate senior economic analyst. Somebody texted in, Trump derangement syndrome strong this morning. You're ridiculous to start this stuff at 6 a.m. Well, all I'm doing is calling out BS, because you can't say the same exact thing is odd last year, now it's even. It's up last year, now it's down. It's black last year, now it's white. You can't do that. It's just BS. So I would ask, where is the real Trump derangement syndrome when it comes to this kind of thing? We'll take a break, come back, talk to Matt Boudreaux about the Office of Motor Vehicles. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. So I came in yesterday afternoon to do a little bit of work, get a little bit ahead, and I saw the cruise ship make the U-turn, whatever they do, back up and then go down, you know, because they can't go under the bridge, I guess, right? So is this a different ship, obviously?
This is a new one. Apparently, there are three cruise ships sailing out of New Orleans, three Carnival ships anyway. And I don't remember which one of this is, if it's the Liberty or one of the other ones. But it
could
comes
be the same one, because that'd be a short cruise. That'd be like a ferry boat ride.
It'd be a ferry boat ride. This one comes in on Mondays, and I think this is a five-day cruise ship. The one that left yesterday, I believe, is on a six-day excursion. It'll be back on Saturday.
I know you're engaged. Have y'all ever taken one of those?
We've done two. This is the first year in the last three in which we've not gone on a cruise.
Out of here?
Out of here, yes.
How are they? Nice.
They're fantastic. Carnival does a great job with them. We did a five-day the first year. We did a seven-day last year, and both times were fantastic. Carnival does a really good job.
So I see that the little yellow slides and all of that. You can go on that as soon as you get on a boat, or when does that get going?
You can. Once you get on and once they take off, you can, or even before they take off, you can go up there and enjoy the water slide. But from personal experience,
So what are you doing when you get on? Do they have like a welcome party or something?
There's a welcome party. You have restaurants. You essentially do what you want on that top deck with those water slides. You've got basketball courts, mini putt. There's a giant movie projection screen, so they do movies every night, several pools. It's really what you want to do. People think of it as think of the Love Boat and an itinerary that's set out for you. It's not like that. You do what you want at your own pace, and then when you land at dock, you can do excursions on shore.
All right. I was just curious about that. We'll take a break. We come back, we'll talk about some revisions at the DMV, the Office of Motor Vehicles, OMV. They say could happen very quickly, that could change things drastically for the better. We'll find out when we come back on WWL. 6:45, quarter till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Hot, humid, some tropical stuff going on in the Atlantic, not expected to affect us, so it is August 4th, and we're getting that time of hurricane season. We're going to have to start paying attention. Matthew Boudreaux joins us, interim deputy commissioner with the OMV, the Office of Motor Vehicles. How you doing, Matthew?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
I just got a brand new truck, and I know this has nothing to do with what we're going to talk about, but I love the website, the Express Lane, where you can go and see if the personalized license plate is available. How do you go about getting a personalized plate?
Yeah, so that's the best place to start, expresslane.org.
Mm-hmm.
Go down under the vehicle section. You go into personalized plates. You can search and see what's available or even, you know, what's not allowed sometimes for people who
think they're going to be a little cute, right? A little cutesy with
yeah,
the, yeah.
A little too cute.
One ever gotten through that you had to recall or not?
Yes, that has certainly happened before, but we have a system in place now that we think efficient, and we have a little committee that will
have you had to recall them or not? I'm just curious.
Yeah, we have recalled some things before.
All right, wise guy. All right, wise guy. Funny. That's real good. That's great. Send it back, right?
Exactly. You guys, we got through it, but we need it back now.
So what do? You go to that site, and then is it a different license plate for a truck or not?
Go under vehicles, and then, of course, you can check. And all the steps there, you actually apply. We run it. We check it to see if anybody has it, if it's allowed, and then we'll contact you back and get the process going.
All right. Let's talk about the changes at the OMV. Going to the OMV could get easier as Louisiana replaces a 50-year-old system, and it'll be quick. That's good news for everybody. Tell me what's going on at the OMV now with, I guess, the system that's in place. I know it's been shutting down a lot, right?
Well, as of April, we've been able to stabilize it, and we're able to process transactions. But the analogy we like to use is that it's held together with Gorilla Tape, and it's just not a long-term solution. We knew once we were able to get it stable back in the spring that we had to do something quick because it's expiring, and there's not a lot of life left to it. So we are in a good spot now, and we're thankful for that. But we found a new solution that's going to modernize it. And of course, like you said, it's a decades old mainframe infrastructure, and we're going to move to a state-of-the-art system. It's going to be a modern solution that's just going to significantly enhance our driver services and our vehicle services across the state.
You know, as you say, 50 years, that's 1975, and I took some computer classes in 1975, and it's not even close to what we have today. So how were you able to even function all this time, Matthew?
Yeah, I mean, it's been patched together. You know, there are so many programs within the system, and really, you have to see it, and it's amazing to think that we're operating on this. It's just an antiquated system, and to see what we're moving to is very exciting, and certainly something that Louisiana residents should be excited about. You know, we'll be able to process transactions in a seamless manner, more efficient. It's going to make things easier on our staff as well, and I think it's going to help to not only hire but to train and to retain staff, and so that's been an issue for us over the years as well. And so it's going to be all in one system. Right now, we have to go through several different programs to do just one simple transaction. And so overall, it's just going to be much more efficient. And then, of course, you know, we're able to kind of configure this new system just to meet the needs of the state and legislation and Louisiana, and just to make it a more user-friendly experience. It'll help us put more transactions online. And, of course, that alleviates some of the traffic inside the field offices and able to make things more smooth there as you come in and visit.
Now, let me take a break. We come back. I'm going to ask you, as we go into the OMV, just us people, right, or deal with them, what and you kind of addressed this before with the 50-year-old system, what don't we know in terms of the challenges that you're facing, and what's it going to look like? Give me some specific examples when we come back, if you would, Matthew, about how a normal transaction that can be so problematic now is going to be so much easier for us. We're talking to Matthew Boudreaux, Interim Deputy Commissioner with the Office of Motor Vehicles. They're updating a 50-year-old computer system. Goes back to 1975. If y'all had anything to do with computers in 1975, I think that was still cards, as a matter of fact, maybe. I don't know. We'll take a break, come back, and talk some more. Right now, time for traffic, WWL. 6:56, 4 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Matthew Boudreaux, Interim Deputy Commissioner with the Office of Motor Vehicles. Give me the time frame on this update of, so what you're doing is you're getting rid of everything that before you, do you need new computers? Do you get rid of everything, software, all the hardware? You start everything brand new? How does that work, Matthew?
Yeah, so what we have, we'll keep going with until the new system is implemented, and it's going to be a 2-year project. So, you know, we're hopeful that even before then there'll be some real enhancements, especially on the driver's license side, that we'll be able to implement before the project is complete.
Like what, really, for example? Because I got to tell you, this express lane thing, when it comes to registration and driver's license, it's worked pretty simply for me. It's pretty easily worked pretty easy for me. Where are the problems?
Yeah, I think the basics, renewals and duplicates, is you know, in a good spot. But we're looking to modernize, looking to the future. You know, you can't change your address online of your driver's license. That's something that we want to enable customers to do. We want to look at a pre-application process where customers could upload their documents before their appointment. That way our staff gets a head start on it before they show up. We're obviously going to, you know, that'll speed up a transaction. And then on the reinstatement side, we want to be able to communicate with people quicker when they owe us fees and fines. And so right now we have to send them a letter in the mail. And so we want to look, and we're going to enhance the way that we communicate and notify residents of when they owe money.
Why did it take this long? Why did this get 50 years old?
Well, it's been kicking in the road a few times. And there have been two other projects, to my knowledge, that have started to modernize the system, but they failed. Mm-hmm. This is the third time in recent memory that I'm aware of, and the third time is going to be the charm, because this is something that's going to happen. We're very confident in the vendor, and we're looking forward to next week. We have a kickoff, and we're going to get the ball rolling.
So this is, the deal is signed, the money is there, this is going to happen?
Yes, sir. It is a done deal. Contract is signed, and we've already been, you know, communicating with them on some preliminary items, and then they'll be in Louisiana next week, on boots on the ground, ready to roll.
I know somebody texted this in, not me, because as I said, the dealings I've had have all been online and it's worked flawlessly, but somebody texted in about attitude of people at OMV. I would imagine if they're dealing with an antiquated system and they got to go through 15 different, jump through 15 different hoops to accomplish the simplest of things, I would think that this might maybe encourage more people to work there and also result in a friendlier staff?
Yeah, I think it'll help, no doubt. And of course, you know, with a new system, we can train. I mean, you're right. You're looking at an old system. It's hard to get people in, to train them. Sometimes it takes up to 6 months to train people on this system. And so we are confident that overall it's going to help our staff, and of course, morale as well. But we're working on other things outside of this with customer service and training just to enhance that experience. And you know, we know that these types of transactions seem mundane, but we want everybody in Louisiana to come in and have a great experience, and customer service is something that we are really diving into right now to help, you know.
Thank you, Matthew. Appreciate it.